Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Today, we're talking about requirements and compliance in the government source selection process. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. Becoming a Skyway community member makes it easier to navigate the complicated world of government contracting because you gain context from Skyway's team of former contracting officers. Go to skywaymember.com to get started with a personal membership, because without context, you're likely overlooking problems that you don't see. Okay, let's get started with today's episode. Government requests for proposals contain many clear requirements. They also contain many, maybe hundreds, of compliance items.
Hundreds. One of our clients, one of our customers, they lost the competition because they failed to submit a letter, one letter, from a government office that was required by the RFP. That is one of the compliance items, those hundreds of items. While proposal support is one of the things we help our customers with, not all of them use us all the time, nor should they. Some of them use us a little, some of them use us a lot. In this case, they had the capacity to handle the proposal themselves, which is why we found out about this after the fact.
During the post-mortem, the proposal lead said something like, "We didn't provide the letter, but rather included an explanation in our proposal. It was a technicality that we didn't have the letter, and they disqualified us based on that technicality."
Okay, well, you may want to explain what a postmortem is for folks.
Postmortem, yes. So after you lose a competition, it's very common to gather the proposal team together and other experts to look at the feedback you got from the government. Figure out why you lost so you don't lose that way again. You might lose again, but don't lose for the same dumb reasons that you lost last time.
And I would argue that you should do a postmortem even when you win, because you want to do more of what works. But yeah, the concept is really sound.
Exactly. Okay, back to the technicality. To be clear, this client understands that their proposal wasn't compliant and that they lost fair and square. It's not a sour grapes kind of thing. The point is important. Compliance items are requirements, and a proposal is unawardable if it's not compliant. Before we start arguing about that, let's stop and say thanks.
Let us argue. The thanks this week goes to Mike Sutton and Zach Gosh. They're from Bell Flight. Mike and Zach gave me great feedback. It was really valuable feedback on the Contracting Officer Podcast, and they scheduled a podcast feedback session at askskyway.com. And during our chat, they explained how they found the podcast, how they use it, and what they'd like to hear more of. And they also joined the Contracting Officer Podcast group on LinkedIn so we can connect with them more. The Contracting Officer Podcast group on LinkedIn helps us see who's actually listening to the podcast, not who we think is listening, and that way we can serve people better.
Thanks, Mike and Zach. Today we're talking about how compliance is pass-fail in proposal evaluations. Let me give you a little more of the setup of how this situation that we're talking about happened. The request for proposals included a form with a whole bunch of yes or no checkboxes. One of those checkboxes said, if you check yes here, you must submit a letter from a specific government entity that says everything is still okay. Even though your answer is yes, it's all good. Our community member read the form and guessed that yes was the correct answer based on his understanding of the question. It was kind of a complicated question. It's one of those government things where in the non-government world, the answer might be this. In the government world, it might be this.
Those are always the fun ones to answer.
He looked at it and said, I'm gonna say yes just to be safe, because I don't want to be caught if the answer is no. There's a lesson to be learned here. Never guess at an answer, especially if your choice requires you to submit more documentation, if it creates more work for you. Research the proper answer or ask a question of the government during the draft RFP or RFP question and answer window.
And this is one of the reasons our customers use us for compliance reviews or red team reviews. Because if you're guessing or you think you might be guessing, ask us. That's what we help with.
Since our customer's yes wasn't a really strong yes, they didn't obtain the letter from the agency and instead submitted a rational explanation in their proposal of why they checked yes based on their understanding of the question. As you would imagine, the government looked at it, noticed that there was no letter there as required, and disqualified their proposal as non-compliant without ever evaluating the rest of the proposal. Their notice to unsuccessful offerer, the you lost letter.
We have a podcast about that right. concept.
It specifically cited the fact that they did not submit the letter, therefore they're non-compliant. So that's lots of time and money writing this proposal down the drain. Why did the government disqualify this proposal based on such a minor issue?
Because they could. I mean, that's a cynical answer, but the reality is they need to thin the herd. And the compliance is where they start. As a contracting officer, this is where I would start, is did everyone meet all the compliance requirements of the RFP?
Now, it's unlikely that the omission of this letter in any way reflects on the company's ability to perform the work. It's not a significant risk factor.
It's not a key performance requirement. This wasn't going to make or break the performance of the contract.
Right. This is way buried in the pages and pages of RFP besides the actual requirements of the contract. So why disqualify? First, if the government received multiple compliant offers, there's no reason to spend the time evaluating any additional proposals. Make the job faster and easier. Make the source selection faster and easier by not even looking at the ones that aren't compliant.
And before folks get judgy, it's very easy to be judgy here and think, well, they just kicked us out. Ask yourself what you would do. It will go back to building the deck. You know, let's go back to if you're building
my
a deck.
My favorite.
If I asked a couple of companies for quotes on building a deck and I wanted it built out of cedar wood, so it smelled great, right? And someone sent me a quote that said, hey, I can build it out of plywood. I could go back to them and say, no, I said cedar. We need to do it out of cedar. If I had four proposals that said they could make it out of cedar, why would I go back to the guy that made it out, that said he would make it out of plywood?
Right.
It's human nature. I'm trying to thin the herd.
And even if it was something more simple, if you ask them to submit their certificate of insurance with their proposals when they build their deck to make sure that they're insured, and they didn't submit the certificate of insurance, if you got five proposals and four of them submitted that and the fifth one didn't, you'd say, forget those guys. If you only got one proposal, you might want to check a little harder to see if they're actually insured. Looking at this from a different direction, why would the government disqualify the proposal? If the government has a favored offerer, if they have a favorite, if they have somebody they want to win.
An incumbent, for example?
Yeah. You just made it foolproof for them to award to that company because you missed a requirement. You were non-compliant. You can't even protest that kind of thing. You're done. You made it easy on them. So why would they disqualify you? To make it easy on the evaluation team and get the award done quickly. Another angle, what if the government actually wanted to evaluate and potentially award to the offer who didn't submit the letter with their proposal?
That's why this is a thinking job.
Which brings us to FAR time. We're in FAR Part 15, Contracting by Negotiation. This is 15.306, Exchanges with Offers After Receipt of Proposals. 15.306B is Communications with Offers Before Establishment of the Competitive Range. It says, communications are exchanges between the government and offerors after receipt of proposals, leading to the establishment of the competitive range. If a competitive range is to be established, these communications, and there's a whole list of things here, but number two, these communications, 15.306B2, these communications may be conducted to enhance the government's understanding of proposals, allow a reasonable interpretation of the proposal, or facilitate the government's evaluation process. Here's the important part. Such communications shall not be used to cure proposal deficiencies or material omissions.
And the key judgment call, the thinking job part of this, is it says may, first of all, and then a definition of material omissions is a judgment call. So this is the part of the FAR. This is the contracting officer gets to decide how important that form really was. They can decide it's really important because they really, really want you to win and need somebody to do it. Or they can decide, this is a reason to get you out of the way because we have other companies that can do this, as harsh as that sounds.
We'll talk about how that could play out in a minute. First, let's link this to the acquisition and execution time zones.
And if you're not familiar with the acquisition time zones, we cover those in episode number 3. And the execution time zones, we cover in episode 84.
Today, we're talking about the RFP zone, the third of the acquisition time zones. The RFP zone is where the proposal writing happens and where contractors are reviewing their proposals to make sure they're compliant. It's also where you're asking questions of the government after you've seen the RFP. We're also talking about the source selection zone, the fourth and last of the acquisition time zones. This is where the government's evaluation of the proposals takes place. Let's get back to why this is important. Technical requirements in requests for proposals are usually clear.
Usually they're clear. How about this? The government's trying to make them clear, but they're not always successful. It's not easy.
It's not. Sometimes it seems easy, and then you find out it's a lot harder when you're actually trying to evaluate it. But think about the technical requirements for an all-terrain vehicle. You've had these before, right? The range, it has to be able to go a certain amount of miles on a tank of gas, or it has to have a top speed of 22 miles an hour. That's clear. You either meet that or not. Sometimes the compliance requirements aren't so black and white in the RFP. They're buried in there amongst the pages and pages of clauses and checklists and other forms. If you're writing a proposal and you're reading that RFP and it isn't clear, you don't understand, ask questions.
And that's why Skyway is here, to help you understand when to ask the questions, how to ask the questions, if you can ask certain questions in certain time zones. And that's also why targeting is so critical, is knowing what questions to ask when makes a big difference. Because if you ask some of these questions in the RFP zone or the source selection zone, it's too late.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that part. Formal and informal questions to the government are allowed, depending on the timing. Early in the process, prior to the final RFP release, informal questions may be allowed. You may be able to pick up the phone and get a question answered. But after the final RFP is released, it's a formal process that makes it a little bit more difficult to get important information back and forth. If you can't ask questions and you don't understand the request for proposal, you may want to consider walking away from this one. You may want to consider no bid.
It's a hard decision to make, but it should always be in the back of your mind. Up to the moment where you submit your proposal, at any point along that process, you can disqualify the opportunity. And if you don't clearly understand some critical piece of it, and the definition of criticality is a judgment call, it might make sense to walk away.
Bottom line, if the RFP says to submit a document, submit it. No explanations for non-compliance are allowed. You can't just say, I didn't submit this, and here's why I didn't submit it. It doesn't work that way. But as we touched on before, per the FAR, it doesn't have to be a fatal proposal flaw. The contracting officer's judgment of the materiality of the omission is required.
I go back to the sales axiom of people do what's in their own best interest. And the best interest of the government is to move on to the next offer, assuming that there is more than one to pick from. There's almost always more than one offer to pick from. So the best interest of the government is to find a reason to take you out of the competition, unless there's a unique scenario where they want to keep you in.
More than one time as a contracting officer, I had a source selection where an offer failed to submit something very minor, and I asked a clarification question. I didn't make it a deficiency yet. I asked a very simple question. It appears that the letter required by ... was omitted from your proposal. Did you intend to submit the letter with your proposal? And that leaves them with a yes or no, and they can say, yes, I did, and here's that letter. And then we all just move on. It's just a minor clarification. But that's that judgment call. Was the omission material to them being able to do the job or not do the job? Or was it just a minor paperwork exercise, right? If I really wanted them, or if they were the best offer, or I probably haven't looked at the other ones yet, but if they have a very compelling offer that's very awardable, does it make sense? Is it in my best interest to kick them out for something super, super minor? Probably not. But if I have 20 proposals and I already know I have 3 compliant ones, maybe I don't bother past looking at this and saying, oh, they missed something. They're out.
Yeah, I've gone both ways. I've kept people in by allowing them to answer a clarification question. And I've also used this to thin the herd. So again, it's a judgment call, but the best way to avoid it is don't put yourself in that spot in the first place.
Right. Specifically on the government side, know what you're asking for in the RFP and why you're asking for it. In the case we're talking about, did that letter actually help the government assess the offeror's ability to do the job or meet the requirements? Maybe, maybe not.
But it helped them thin the herd, which was in their best interest.
Sometimes the why you're asking for it isn't because it helps you assess whether or not they can do the job. It's because the FAR or some other rule says you have to ask for it. It may not provide any apparent benefit to you.
Yeah, there are lots of things in the FAR that don't provide any apparent benefit to anybody, but they're still in there.
As we've been talking about, government folks can use noncompliance to limit the number of proposals that they have to evaluate if they have enough compliant proposals. And that may be just one compliant proposal in a competition where many people competed is enough to evaluate an award.
Wendy Freeman and I talked about that in the recent episode. The idea of deconstructing the RFP is what the industry calls it. And that compliance review or a compliance checklist is what I called it as a contracting officer. But that same idea is there. In order to do that compliance review, industry's looking at that first. Both sides are looking at it. Just make sure you don't miss anything.
Government folks, use your judgment to work through things like this where it's allowed by the FAR. Remember that we're trying to get our users whatever they need, be it products or services, on time and on budget every time.
And remember that FAR 15306B2, I think it was you found, it says communications may effectively result in them staying in or out. It's a judgment call. This is the thinking part of the job.
Moving to the industry side, why does industry care about this? Huh. Obviously.
losing sucks.
Yeah, there are no technicalities. There are just RFP requirements. You can't explain your way around noncompliance. When in doubt about the requirement, be it something blatant in the RFP or something buried in the pages and pages of clauses, if you have a doubt, ask a question of the government or choose not to submit.
Don't count on the government to find a way to award your noncompliant proposal. There may not be a way. I've had ones where and I know you have too. We've talked about them on this podcast. There are ones that the government customer absolutely wanted this company to win, and compliance issues, you just can't work around them. They can't suddenly say, okay, well, this was a requirement. This was a need of the FAR. They didn't meet it, but they get a pass. There are scenarios where we just can't get there from here.
Right. It's very important. Industry folks, if you can meet 99% of the requirements, but you can't meet that last 1%, you have a few choices. If this is prior to the RFP release, communicate with the government and try to get them to change that 1% that you can't meet or remove it so that you can submit a 100% compliant proposal. And remember, if you ask them to change it and explain to them that, hey, I can't meet that requirement, and then they don't change it and the final RFP comes out the same way, they don't want to award to you.
That's an indicator that what's important to you is not important to them.
Right. So at that point, you might as well not bid. You're not going to win. Another thing you can do if you can't meet that last 1% or 10% or whatever is add a teammate who can meet the final requirements so that your team is compliant. And the ultimate choice is, don't bid. If you can't meet all the requirements in an RFP, you don't get any credit for meeting 99% of the things that they've asked for. If you can't meet it and you can't find another way around it, probably best to not submit a proposal.
As you were saying that, you can get credit for 99% performance if that's an evaluation criteria. But we're not talking about evaluation criteria. We're talking about compliance. And like you said, compliance is pass-fail. So there's a difference between the evaluation criteria may say, how well can you do this? Okay, that's different. What we're talking about here is, can you do this? If you can't, or the process requires you to do a few steps to prove that you can and you don't do those steps, that's a compliance issue. It's go, no go.
Yep.
Just let's be clear on that.
Yep. If box is checked, yes, submit this letter. Is there a letter here? No, there's not. You fail.
It's kind of like a tax form since it's tax season. Maybe think of that.
All right, Kevin, let's wrap this one up.
In the commercial market, in the business to consumer or business to business, it's often possible to work around compliance problems. Let's say my cousin submitted that proposal for the deck that had plywood. Well, it's my cousin, so I can say, you know what, I'll give him another chance. Well, in the government market, it doesn't necessarily, in fact, it often does not work that way. I mean, the process has a lot more weight because the FAR and lots of other regulations require a certain amount of process. So you can't work around this stuff.
Man, you would get in a lot of trouble if you gave your cousin's company a couple shots to fix their proposal when it was non-compliant. There's so many things wrong with that.
Just giving him another shot at it is one. Then the fact that it's my cousin. We have an episode about that too. Okay, on the industry side, consider the risk of non-compliance. Losing on a quote-unquote technicality, it's still losing. Don't take this lightly, because like you said, if you can't do that 1% and that 1% happens to be something that they can't award to you, you're in the same place, which is you lost. So this is not something to take lightly. On the government side, same thing. Don't be flippant about eliminating an offer on a compliance issue. I've done it, and I know for a fact somebody got fired over it one time. These are people. People get fired. Their jobs are at stake. Offerors may have trouble recovering if they bid outside their weight class, which, by the way, we have a weight class episode. Is episode number 16 explains what that is. In this case, our customer was not outside their weight class. This is a learning lesson they just went on because they were targeting well. But government folks, be aware that these are people submitting these proposals. Expect some frustration, like them calling it a technicality, because it feels like that to them.
In this case, it's a good thing. The company is mature, and they're able to get a little mad and say, they threw us out on a technicality, but they understand that technicality is non-compliant, and they lost fair and square. And they can take it as a lesson learned and moved on.
My advice to the government folks to limit the number of, or decrease the number of technicalities, is to focus on the targeting of your language in your RFPs. If they clearly understand that they can't do things, they won't bid. As opposed to finding out, again, raising my hand because I was appalled the number of times this came up during a debriefing, when somebody said, hey, well, I couldn't do that. I'm thinking, then why did you bid? Well, they bid because they misunderstood the language, which I wrote. So be aware that the more you target, the more crystal clear that requirement is, the fewer technicality complaints you're going to get.
Yep, totally agree there. And with that, I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
All right, see you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for this episode. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to our sponsor, Skyway Acquisition. Skyway guides customers through the government source selection process. Call 877-884-5280 or go to askskyway.com to set up a time to learn more. We'll see you next week.